Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition in our series, our draft series of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. And as always, this show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Use the promo code 5 for you out-of-staters. Use the promo code 5. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's the best promo in the business. And also go to betteredge.com/5reasons. And you get $20 just for signing up. And of course, if you want to talk draft with other like-minded Dolphin fans, about 2,000 of you, you go to our Discord at discord.gg/OnlyFins. And you can become a member there for $3 a month. Something tells me that you're working on some type of publication, Simon. Tell the people about it and how they can obtain said publication.
It's a bane of my entire existence. It's 124,196 words of, I hope my computer doesn't crash and then I'd probably just jump out.
You told me 129,000 words. You owe me 5,000.
No, I think I did. It's never been up to 129. It was 123 the other day.
Oh, okay.
I'm just finishing the kind of read through and the cleanup and the proofread and the edit. So, it's close. I am on defensive lineman. I feel like I'm getting closer, but it is just never ending. But it is 320 of the best prospects in the league with all their, you know, on-field information and then all the kind of the behind-the-scenes off-field information, which I hope sort of sets it apart a little bit. And you know, we'll tell you about arrests and injuries and 30 visits, but also just kind of quirky little bits about people. You'll find out all sorts of interesting stuff that motivates people and, you know, maybe helps you decipher whether or not somebody's going to be a player or not because you know their background or you know certain things, or you know that they're a winner. They've won state championships in different sports and they won state championships in football, and whether they transferred or what positions they used to play and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, that's what it is. And you can get it. You can send me an email at 2024NFLDraftBook@gmail.com or just hit me up on Twitter and I'll sort it out for you.
Of course, if you are a member of OnlyFans,
yes,
it'll be easier to obtain there. All you have to do is just talk to Simon. He's there all the time.
And it's £10 of English money and $12.50 of US money.
Yeah, somebody told me the other day when they use the word, you know, pound to describe your currency, they always say proper money after.
Proper money. Pounds are real money, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Well, our money is not very real.
No.
Simon. All right, we're going to start with defense. It's a different sport nowadays, okay? It's not the typical defensive ends of yesteryear, okay? But so we're going to go start with what is considered edge players. There's going to be some guys that are sprinkled in there that are kind of versatile. And then we're going to take the interior defensive linemen and we're going to wrap it up all in one bow. One quick question to begin, and I'll start with you, Simon. Is Darius Robinson the most versatile of all the day one eligible edge defensive lineman players?
Do you know, I wouldn't class him as an edge. That's the thing. I mean, when you talk about edge, to me, I'm thinking of what we would used to call outside linebackers back in the day, you know, the Lawrence Taylors. So to me, the edge class is, you know, Latu and Dallas Turner and Jared Verse and Chop Robinson and those guys. And to me, Darius Robinson is a different type of player. I mean, he's a guy that can play outside, but he's a guy that can reduce inside. And, you know, to me, he's a defensive end. I think I would class him as that, you know, one of those kind of tweener guys at 6'5", 286 that, you know, you just line up anywhere across the formation, essentially in a 43 front. But I suppose the question back to you is, are we differentiating between edge rushers or are we differentiating between defensive ends? Because with ends, You got Robinson, you got Michael Hall Jr., you've got Brandon Dorlus, you got Marcus Harris, Mekhi Wingo, who are kind of, all of these are kind of tweener guys who could play end, who could play tackle, Eric Watts, you know, guys like this. And, you know, to me, edge guys are those sort of outside linebacker guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what I was getting at is if you lump them all together.
Yeah, if you lump them all, is he the most versatile? I don't know. I mean, he's certainly very good. You know, I think Verse is extremely versatile in terms of what he can do. You know, we'll get on to guys like Latu and Robinson and Chop Robinson and Dallas Turner, and they're more one-trick ponies, I suppose, at this point. So, yeah, Robinson is a pretty versatile guy. I know Chris loves him. I'm a big fan as well. And you know, you have to turn on the Missouri tape to see what he does. And he's long and 84.5-inch arms, and the frame to get up to 300 pounds. He's 286 at the combine. So, but I counted snaps. He took snaps at 9, 6, 3, 4, 0, and 2. In the games that I watched, and I'm sure he probably lined up elsewhere as well. And yeah, dominant run defender, menace at the point of attack, and you just can't handle him in one-on-ones. And, you know, very good first-round player.
Chris, you're a fan. I know you're a fan. You've talked about him plenty on OnlyFans. Give us your scouting report of what you've seen on film of Darius Robinson.
Well, once upon a time, we would just call this a defensive end. Right. You know, and I think that we would look at him and say, you know, he's Cameron Jordan or somebody like that. And I think that that's probably how he fits, you know, in terms of versatility. You know, yeah, he's going to play. He can play with his hand up and has, you know, plenty of times, I think, played with his hand up, but I think his future in the NFL is probably going to be with his hand down, you know, quite a bit. And I think that, yeah, he was one of the best. He might have been, you know, the most fun player for me to watch on tape, among all of the defensive players. You know, one of the most fun, certainly, but, you know, for a while, it was just watching a different caliber player. I think what the size and the strength of the player at that position matters to me, because I've just seen it, you know, too many times where the guys who are flashier and a little bit lighter can struggle in the NFL. And the NFL actually does, at the end of the day, the NFL needs guys that are very physical and very strong and long arms and, you know, can really do a lot of things. And he's that guy to me. He is that guy on the edge that can reduce inside and play against guards. He can go out into space and rush wide. And he's a guy that didn't have the advantages in his scheme at Missouri in the way that they used him, because at times it seemed almost like, you know, they're playing him kind of like a Simon mentioned 4-eye or just right over the tackle, or you know, and he was taking up kind of half of the offensive line. While they loaded up the other side. And I think that that's the kind of guy that you do, because he's so good that he can open things up for the rest of your team while also being a threat himself. And that's the kind of player that I see. I see the kind of player that that other people on the defense can rely on. And that's a really top tier player when you think about it. At the NFL level. So, you know, I hear that, who knows what you hear, but I hear that he's got more fans in the NFL than he has to date in the media. I note with interest that he's one of the 13 or 14 people that have been invited to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And all the others are guys that, you know, you would think are going to go very pretty high. And so these projections of him lasting until the end of the first round, possibly into the second round, I think are probably off the mark. I think this is the type of player that the NFL was always destined to like more than us in the media. And so yeah, that's kind of what I see. Basically, you know, one liner, he's Cameron Jordan.
High price. All right, we're going to take these by days, and I'm going to classify. I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, I'm going to prescribe the fate for all these players, and I'm just going to prescribe their day status. I'm going to go Latu versus Turner, Chop Robinson. Those are my day one candidates on the edge. Rank them, Simon, and give us the skinny on the four.
I would have them Latu 1, Verse 2, Turner 3, and then a significant gap to Robinson in 4. To me, Latu is, you know, shorter than ideal arms, alarming medical history that includes being forced to retire. UCLA kid, where's number 15? Where have you heard all that before?
Mm-hmm.
Great bend, flattens the rush path, and is comfortably the most refined pass rusher in the class. He has an incredible arsenal of pass rush tools, and Jim Nagy said he has a graduate degree in rush technique. He just gets it. He's a stud. He's my favorite defensive player in the draft. Verse, transfer from Albany, kind of carnage creator. Came back this year. Almost declared a year ago. He's fast. He's physical. He's the most versatile of the four in terms of his ability to play the run. You can start him from day one. He's excellent against the run. He has a high floor and a high ceiling, and to me is one of the kind of the best 15 players in the draft. Turner, elite speed threat off the edge. I mean, a phenomenal first step, phenomenal get off, will threaten any pocket. He's bendy up the arc. Yeah, I love how he cuts under the arm of the tackle like he's a limbo dancer, but he is really unrefined. His hand usage is mediocre at best. And his ceiling is, you know, obviously sky high, but it's a bit of a work in progress. And I actually think he'll take a bit longer to get to that level in the NFL. And then Robinson, I suppose one of the more polarizing prospects in the draft. I think his tape's a bit of a roller coaster. You know, it's a ride of sort of, you know, explosive speed rushes mixed with stretches where he kind of disappears a little bit. And, you know, again, another with incredible get off. But the baby elephant in the room for me is production. You know, for all his athletic ability, for all that first step quickness, he has just 11 and a half career sacks and only 4 in his final campaign. So that will be a bit of an issue for teams. But, you know, if he can, you know, if you can line him up as a sub package rusher and, you know, especially on third downs, he can have the sort of impact that, you know, every team's looking for, can get himself up into the 10, 12 sack area, I would hope, because he does have the get off to be a, you know, a pretty devastating impact off the edge. But that's how I'd rate the four.
Yeah, by the way, it's remarkable how much Chop Robinson looks like Arik Armstead. Like they could be brothers.
In terms of facial looks or actual play.
Look at their face. Go put Arik Armstead's picture up, and then put Chop Robinson's picture up.
Okay.
They could be twins. Chris?
Oh, they don't really look alike on the field, though.
No, that's what I was going to say.
No, they're different sizes. Much different sizes.
Yeah.
Chris, rank them for me. Latu, Verse, Turner, Robinson. By the way, that's how I have it. How do you have it?
Well, it is really difficult because the wild card is Latu's medical. And I'm still seeking, from my own people about any insight that they can give me about his medical, which I haven't yet heard yet, but you know, I should hear something more shortly. But you know, that is a big wild card because there is no doubt that he is. I almost think it's doing him a disservice to call him, to say that he's polished, he's advanced in his technique, and bring up all those things because. You know, that almost brings to mind, well, yeah, okay, but what's the upside then? You know, the NFL, where's he going to get better if he's already that technical? You know, where is he going to get better? And I think it is more than polish. I think it's his ability to constantly throw moves and counter after counter after counter at an offensive lineman or a tight end as the play progresses. He's very quick, you know, snappy in how he goes from move to counter to counter. And other players, I don't think, have that ability. I think other players have, and that's more of an ability thing. That's not even just, you know, a teaching thing. That's not even, oh, you know, well, they'll all get this once they get some coaching. It's no, there's something unique about the way that he does it. And that's why I think he is probably the best in the class as a pass rusher. Is he the best overall football player? You know, where am I even putting Darius Robinson on the same, you know, same category as these guys? That's what I don't necessarily know. Because, you know, Dallas Turner, for all that we could say that his rush is unrefined, and that is true. It's also schematic based, because a lot of what he's doing isn't necessarily attack, 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 right? And that's, I think some guys, you look at them and you realize, you know, in their scheme, whether they're having to read more in the backfield or whether they're having to kind of stand their ground a little bit more, there has to be some allowance for scheme in that. And I think Dallas Turner's IQ is actually quite high. In addition to his being so athletically gifted. And that's probably why overall he is going to go the highest, is because you put together that physical ability that he does have, and he does have tremendous physical abilities, but he's also, I think he's a very high IQ player. So when he gets into situations where, you know, and he gets into schemes where he's allowed to attack more and allowed to just, you know, fire off that Tommy gun like Leatu does, then maybe it could look a little bit different. Where I appreciate Chop Robinson, actually, though, is because this guy, you say his face looks a lot like Arik Armstead. Well, on the field, he looks exactly like Cameron Wake to me. He plays like Cameron Wake. He is all explosiveness. He does not win the same way Leatu does or some of these other guys do. He leans a little bit more on his explosiveness package. But that explosiveness package doesn't just translate to, you know, just constant outside edge speed rush. He's not what's that guy's name? Robert something or other. He used to play for the Dolphins.
Quinn.
Yeah, he's not Robert Quinn that way, where it's just all speed around the outside, get bendy and come up under. But, you know, Cameron Wake didn't end up all that either. Cameron Wake did have counters. He did go speed to power. And I think that Chop Robinson does that very well. And at the end of the day, this guy's explosiveness, and he's just exploding all over the place on these against the offense, is what's so appealing about him. And I think it's going to make him good in all phases. And so, you know, ranking them is going to be a little bit about scheme, is going to be scheme dependent, because there are schemes that you're not necessarily going to have Leatu did what he did at UCLA. Now, I don't think that's true of the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins would be a very, very natural fit for him. But, you know, I think that it really is about which flavor you need for your defense. But if you're forcing me to do ordinal rankings, and then I'm going to have to, you know, take aside the medical on Leatu, then I would probably put him number one. Surprisingly, you know, it might surprise some people that I might have Chop Robinson number two, because I think that he was only 21 years old and during the season, and he is still going to continue to get better. And the amount of the amount of growth that I saw just from 1 year to the next, from a 20 to a 21 year old, was something. And the future that on him is I think is pretty strong. So I would have those two, but followed pretty quickly by Dallas Turner and Jared Verse. And with the caveat that, you know, not everybody's scheme is going to put those players in that order. And I would say, like, if Chop Robinson is Cam Wake didn't fit every defense, you know. Cam Wake was a different kind of player that fit a certain kind of defense. So, you know, Chop Robinson's not going to be everybody's flavor. And that's just the way it is.
All right. Moving on to day two. Simon, who's your day two headliner? And, you know, I don't want you to list all of them, but if you can give us three guys worthy of a second or third round pick.
Yeah, I like Braylon Trice of Washington. I think he's a high motor player. He's got straight line explosion. He's got probably the heaviest hands at the position in the draft. You know, he's not a height, weight, speed kind of trifecta guy. He didn't test very well at the combine. And his listed weight of 245 was down 30 pounds to his actually listed weight at Washington, which was a shock. But, you know, you just watch the tape. You know, this is a guy that just shows up game after game, kind of urgent, physical brand of football. You know, plays against Talese Fuaga and Jordan Morgan, and he had a 30.9% pass rush win rate, which has only ever been topped by four players before, and three of them, Joey Bosa, Chase Young, and Trey Hendrickson, have all been Pro Bowlers. So, you know, 137 pressures in the last two seasons is a phenomenal number. And, you know, he's not going to run the arc and bend under people, but he's heavy-handed. He is excellent, you know, with his hands, swim move, counters, you know, and he has enough to threaten as a pass rusher, and then can, you know, outside, and then can come back across the face of his opponent. That lack of athletic ability that showed up at the combine is an issue, and he's a bit stiff in his ankles and hips and lacks the sort of juice that can set him apart. But I think he's a better player than Joe Tryon Chuinka, who the Buccaneers took in the first round a couple of years ago. He's a good player, Trice. I like Austin Booker, who the Dolphins brought in on a 30 visit. He transferred from Minnesota. Chris said it perfectly the other night. He just moves differently. You know, 505 career snaps, which is incredibly low, but he is long. He has good hands at the point. He can close on the quarterback. He has the ability to turn and run down the sideline. Yeah, he's got massive upside. He's just, you know, 82-inch wingspan, strong hands, vast array of pass rush moves, which sort of defy that inexperience. And, you know, it's not just what you'd expect. You know, he's using push pulls and euro steps and, you know, all these sorts of things. And he is just a pain in the ass from first whistle to last. And then, you know, there's another guy, Marshawn Neeland at Western Michigan, who I don't love, but the other guy who I like a lot, plays opposite Chop Robinson, is Adisa Isaac of Penn State. He's a work in progress. He's got a raw sort of pass rush profile, but he's malleable. He's strong against the run. He's kind of like Josh Sweat, I think. And, you know, only 1,200 defensive snaps, but a high ceiling and a great kid, state champion wrestler. Was a wide receiver before he went to became a pass rusher, and yeah, very, very coachable. All the coaches say, all his teammates say, he's incredibly coachable. So for me, those are kind of the, you know, my headliners on day two, certainly.
All right, Chris, you're day two headliner, and if you can give us three guys.
Yeah, don't forget Chris Braswell. You know, I think he's a very athletic player on the field. He does move well. He's not my favorite by any means, but, you know, Simon has just gone through some of my favorites. You know, so Braylon Trice is probably overall my favorite among the guys that we're talking about. The only thing that I could really add to what Simon said about him is that if you're looking for another guy, if you're going through the class and you're kind of putting on your Leatu-Latu lens, you know, essentially, and saying, well, okay, but who else uses their hands in this way? Who else has a good grasp on being able to throw out pass rush moves and counters and actually attack with a plan and, you know, and be effective that way. Braylon Trice is the guy. You know, Braylon Trice is the guy that uses his hands very well, that looks like he's been taught well, taught how to attack. And I think that he will translate to the next level. But Marshawn Nyland is, to me, you know, I hate the term raw, but he is kind of an unrefined ball of brutality. And I think that he is probably a brutal presence right now more than he is well refined. And I think that he is climbing in the NFL's or in media's eyes, I think, because the NFL do like him. And I'm even hearing that, you know, he could sneak into the, or I'm hearing, like, we're all hearing, this is public information, that, that he could sneak into the bottom of the first round. And I think it's because of that, you know, that raw brutality that he has to his game, that could be refined, could be coached, could be developed as you go along. You know, keeping in mind he is not TJ Watt, but what TJ Watt was to me when he came out that was so attractive was that man was just a raw bundle of brutality, you know, in terms of how he played the game. So that's where you get drawn in by him. You mentioned Austin Booker. Austin Booker is very interesting because, as you say, he has a very different way of moving. I'm glad you brought up the Euro step because he plays the game like a basketball player, and that's kind of where, when I talk about how he moves a little bit differently, I think even his own team and his own coaches have brought that up before the season, that, you know, he has kind of a unique way of moving on the field, but they went with it and they decided to let him go. He played most of the year only 20 years old, you know, and so what you're looking at with him is this guy, you know, is he going to develop in the way that who's the guy that just got traded from the Carolina Panthers from FSU?
Brian Burns.
I look at him, I see another Brian Burns. That's what he looks like to me on the field, the way he moves. Now, I wasn't the biggest fan of Brian Burns coming out because he was very, very highly rated. You were going to have to use an expensive pick on him. But B, I didn't see him being a full and complete player, NFL player. Now, obviously, he's been a wildly successful NFL player. So, you know, stupid me for not recognizing his value. But I see Austin Booker as sort of similar, but at a less expensive price. And with his age and how he moves and how he develops, I think the NFL has to be seeing him as a developmental prospect that could be very, very good by the time, you know, you get finished with him. So I think that is attractive. And between all those guys, you know, I would look at Braylon Trice the most, but I think that there's something really to be said about the sort of potential, even though that's a dangerous word, the potential for Austin Booker and Marshawn Nyland. The one guy that I'll say, you know, Simon brought up that I probably just don't like, you know, everybody, Eye of the Beholder, I probably just don't like him that much, is Addis Isaac of Penn State. I don't love him as a prospect in terms of what his ceiling is going to be at the NFL level. But, you know, I guess we'll see. Time will tell.
All right. And finishing up our ends, edge rushers in total, before we go to break and come back with interior defensive linemen. Give me a day three guy, and in my opinion, and I'll just drop this one in here. I think they need a fourth round pick because that's where I think Mo Kamara is going to go. Although I don't think that that's something that they're going to look at. I think height's an issue. I think they want length, they want height on the edge on this team, and I think that's going to hurt them in their eyes. I think he's a fabulous football player. I think he'll go in the fourth round. out of Colorado State, Mo Kamara. Simon, give me any third day sleepers you like.
Yeah, there's a kid at Houston Christian called Jalix Hunt who's 6'3", nearly 6'4", 250 pounds. He is extremely toolsy, plays with a chip on his shoulder. He was a safety at Cornell, now is a draftable edge rusher. He's got long, lean frame, 35-inch arms. He's got elite explosion. He is the definition of a project, but he can work the arc. He is quick, bendy, great closing speed, and you see him lining up all over the formation. And you know, this is a guy that can peel off and cover, you know, like you'd expect a former safety too. He is a very interesting guy. And then I'll give you one other guy, third day kid who I really like, and that is Jalen Green, who's at James Madison. He had 4.5 sacks in 4 seasons. And then last year he exploded. He had 15.5 sacks, 21 tackles for a loss, 53 pressures and 30 quarterback hurries. And he missed multiple games with a season-ending knee injury. So, you know, he's got no buzz about him whatsoever, maybe because of the injury. And he's an outlier massively because of his size. He's 6'1", 243. But he is incredibly physical. He has violent hands. He has a varied range of pass rush moves and as varied as anybody in his class, not Cordele Aulu-Latu. Spins, rips, pull pushes, chops. He's bendy. He runs, his motor goes 100% the entire game. As a late round sub package pass rusher, he's a very interesting character.
Chris, you got a day three guy?
You know, I don't really have somebody that I'd be banging the table for as a day three pass rusher, which is kind of a little bit unusual. I usually do have some guys that I love. I think Eric Watts of UConn is, you know, if you want to talk about a physically impressive, you know, potentially dynamic guy who will be a better pro than he was a college player. I think that's a guy who is built the right way, who has the ability to move the right way. He's 6'6", 274 with, you know, obviously a monster wingspan. I think it's like something like 7-foot wingspan, 36-inch arms and things like that.
How tall is he?
He's 6'6", and he runs a 4.67.
Wow.
So, 6'6", 274, runs a 4.67 and has, you know, 36-inch arms. I mean, come on.
And a 7-foot wingspan? That's a longer wingspan than Dwayne Wade.
85 inches his wingspan is.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ.
He's a monster. You watch him on tape. And you're never going to be satisfied. I mean, if you were going to watch this guy on tape and be really satisfied, then he'd be a first-round pick. You know, but you're watching him. There's nothing oddly structured about his game to where I think, I'll kind of contrast just to give an idea. But like when you watch, I think Miles Cole, is the guy that I'm thinking of, who has impressive physical qualities. I think he's also he's 6'6" and 278 pounds too. And he's actually got 37-inch arms, believe it or not, 37. I'm not even sure I've seen that. He's got 37-inch arms and a 7'2" wingspan, I think. So compare, contrast, I watch him play though, and I see something structural to his game. That's like, I just don't think that's going to work. You know, it's about the way he moves and the way that he operates, because he also runs a 4.67. These guys are twinsies, right?
By the way, hate to interrupt you. LeBron James is 6'8". He has a 7-foot wingspan.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, this guy's LeBron James basically, in terms of, you know, the physical stature and how they're built. Both of these guys are, but you compare and contrast the two. I think Eric Watts actually is built and moves kind of the right way to where he's going to do things at the NFL level. I don't know that you can say the same about Miles Cole, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've got it exactly opposite. I don't know. But there you have two guys at least that are just physically absolutely as impressive as you get. And I would probably lean toward Eric Watts myself. Now, another guy I'll just bring up because it's interesting. At UCLA, the teammates of Leiatu Latu, the Murphy twins, there's Gabriel Murphy and Grayson Murphy. They're both pretty well built. They're both pretty good athletes. They're both very productive. They had they're identical twins, and they had identical, you know, production, just about identical athleticism. I think that you're going to get Grayson at a little bit of a discount relative to Gabriel, and I think that that would interest me a little bit, particularly since Danton Lynn is such a good you know, friend of Anthony Weaver's, and there's a big connection there, and I think that you know, you could be on to somebody else from the UCLA defense because of that.
All right, and that finishes edges and ends. When we come back, we will talk interior defensive linemen and do about 5 minutes on the linebackers. But first, these words.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. And now we're going to talk interior defensive linemen. Simon, who are your day one guys?
So it's interesting. I am a big fan of, obviously big fan of Byron Murphy. I'm a big fan of Johnny Newton, Jazan Newton. I'm a big fan of Tavondre Sweat. I see what he's done over the last couple of seasons on tape, and we'll kind of get into it in a sec. And I think Braden Fisk of Florida State is a potential day one guy. Murphy is just, you know, he's 297 pounds. He's one of the youngest players in the draft. I thought he was pretty much borderline unblockable down the stretch. Just the interior quickness to get off blocks, to create havoc, to out-leverage everybody he faces, to, you know, jump gaps, to hold up at the point of attack. And, you know, the modern game is predicated on the ability to get interior pass rush pressure. And, you know, most guys, I was talking to Omar Kelly yesterday, he was bemoaning the fact that there are no 350-pounders really left in the world. And I said, you know, that's because the game has changed so completely. You know, Aaron Donald changed it forever, but it was changing before he came along. And, you know, those guys that can create pressure inside are different and are special, and that's why they get paid. We just saw Christian Wilkins get paid. It's why Justin Madubuike was an all-pro, you know, in terms of the numbers of sacks he had. And Murphy is the same sort of guy. He disrupts the pocket. He takes over games. He wins with speed or power. He can shoot gaps. He can get off the snap really quickly. He can drive big men back into the laps of quarterbacks. He controls leverage, and, you know, despite the fact he's 297 pounds. So, you know, this to me is an explosive pass rushing three technique in a 43 front, and he should be an absolutely rock solid top 20 pick. And I think he is right in the wheelhouse of the Dolphins in terms of, you know, they brought in lots of big guys to be around a guy like this. You know, they could easily pull the trigger on him. They could also easily pull the trigger on Jazan Newton of Illinois. He's kind of a similar player, a little undersized, shorter than ideal arms. but great hands. He is a pocket irritator. He is a disruptor, a menace who causes mayhem inside because he's so quick. And he's just great at making tackles for loss. And you turn on the tape, he's just a fun player to watch. He's a constant, like I said, a constant pain in the ass. He's versatile. You throw in a game and you see him, you know, he's out at seven technique. Snap two, he's the nose guard. Snap three, he's the three technique. And he wins from all three spots, you know. He's got this explosive get off, the motor that never stops. And he was recruited to Illinois by Austin Clark, who is our defensive line coach of the Dolphins. So there's clearly going to be a lot of interest there in terms of, you know, understanding who he is and what he means to teams and his mentality and his mindset. Sweat, obviously, 366 pounds, refused to weigh in at the Senior Bowl. There are question marks off the field in terms of some of his kind of maturity or lack thereof. I did some pretty big digging. I spoke to a couple of people at Texas, and actually what I found was that, you know, he got arrested 3 weeks ago, and, you know, I spoke to a GM a couple of years ago who said that this time of the year, after the combine and before the draft, is what they call the stupidity window. And they're always looking for somebody to jump through the stupidity window. And that's what he did. He got arrested at the time where the NFL are looking for people to do this. But actually, he's not a bad kid at all. And a lot of the feedback I had was that, you know, he had a big heart. He's a mummy's boy. He's just a bit of a goofball. He's not a bad kid, like I said, at all. You know, but I know Bob McGinn said that his football character was terrible. Dane Brugler reported that he was a party animal, but like I said, the feedback I got was very different. And what I find fascinating is that when you come across bad people, when you're doing these kind of when I'm doing the draft book, nobody's got a good word to say about them off the field. Everything is, you know, he's great, he's explosive, blah blah blah, but you never see anybody going to bat for them personality wise and I found loads of people who went to bat for Sweat personality wise he is that Planet Theory guy that we talked about, that Bill Parcells used to say, you know, there's only so many people on the planet who are built this way, who look like this. He is 6'4", he's 366 pounds. He is just, I mean, he's got massive potential to soak up as a nose tackle, to drop anchor and just soak up the run game, to soak up two linemen and do that. But I felt down the stretch last year, but also for much of last year, that he began to establish himself as an interior pass rush threat. And if you are 366 pounds and you can get 5, 7, 9 sacks, you can get up to that Dexter Lawrence type number of sacks because of the way that you win, not just with power, but you can talk guys out, you can attack gaps, you can win with hands that just bring unbelievable power. I felt like he had some pass rush juice that he flashed down the stretch, that, you know, some untapped pass rush potential in terms of his ability to get to the quarterback. And whilst there's a lot going on there, I think that he's a very interesting player and I think teams will hit on him. He just needs to mature a little bit. And then Fisk is just this unbelievable kind of ball of energy. I don't think I've seen a guy who's certainly in this class who's more, you know, full gas, no brakes. He is older. He's got a lot of injury red flags. He may have the best motor in the whole draft. I mean, this is a rampant guy who just so twitched up, just, you know, creates vertical displacement at the snap. His get off is so good. His power is so good. He went to Western Michigan, had 1 year at Florida State, and, you know, he's going to be 25 this season. And, you know, he missed a lot of his senior year at high school. He had a bulging lumbar disc in his back. He's had shoulder and elbow surgeries. He's had another shoulder surgery this year. He's wearing an ankle boot for most of the year in the week at Florida State because his ankle was so screwed. But, you know, if you wanted a guy that was built in the image of Dan Campbell and could be a Detroit Lion, then it's Braden Fisk. He is a buzzsaw. So they would be my day one guys, certainly.
Chris, your day one guys.
You know, I think everything said about Byron Murphy, you know, I feel the same way. I mean, he's not a guy that I would necessarily bang the table for, as in like he's really a top 10 pick, something like that. But I think that he deserves to be where he is. Johnny Newton, if Darius Robinson was not my most fun watch on defense in the draft, then, you know, Johnny Newton was, you know, he is, as Simon suggested, an irritant to the offense and just constant, and he's just always coming And I do actually appreciate the way that he can move outside and rush from not just five technique, but like actual seven technique and things like that, because that does start to remind you of Justin Matabuike, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something the Dolphins are going to be paying attention to. Now, do I think that the Dolphins really need to go there with a defensive tackle? No, but this is about the best player available, because they're trying to make sure that they can make it about the best player available. I think Braden Fisk, it's actually interesting. This is, if we're comparing contrast Braden Fisk to say T'Vondre Sweat, I don't think T'Vondre Sweat, I don't rate him very well, but I think that T'Vondre Sweat is, you know, the NFL 30 years ago, and Braden Fisk is the NFL now, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the dynamic that you're looking at. Could the Dolphins use a guy like T'Vondre Sweat the way that the Baltimore Ravens have clearly carved out some space for guys like Michael Pierce or Brandon Williams in the past? Yes. Yeah, I think that's true, but they're not going to pay for that. So T'Vondre Sweat, and the other thing, I think he may be a great guy and fun loving, but is he a hard working guy? That's the question I think people have about him. You know, there's rumors that he got up to 390 pounds in the college playoff. What do you do with that? You know, and I think that that's the unfortunate thing about him. He's going to have to find a work ethic, and that's something that you usually don't really just suddenly find as a 23-year-old.
The one thing I will say, though, Chris, about that is that, sorry to interrupt, is that when he got to Texas, he was a 6'3", 249-pound edge rusher. You know, so this was never a fat kid with a weight problem growing up. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and I totally get the point that, you know, you only get to 390 a certain way, but he wasn't always like a big chubby kid who's always been eating, and, you know, that's always been his thing. You see what I mean? It's I just think there's more to it than that. You would worry about it, certainly, but I don't think the history would necessarily say that he's always been fat since he was 7 years old, because all he does is eat, you know, whatever you guys eat that makes people fat in the United States. But, you know,
everything.
But to actually argue, to counter, I mean, this is a period of time where, you know, you're trying to, this is a test that you can study for, I guess, is absolutely what you know, when it comes to getting into the NFL and going through the draft process. You know, how do you comport yourself during that when it is that important? And what does that mean for how you're going to comport yourself when it's important to stay a certain way in a playoff run?
And when you've got more money. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I, you know, I think that the thing with him is, you know, we had this sort of debate about what's the guy on the Buccaneers that came from Washington, the defensive tackle. Yeah, to Vita Vea. We had sort of this debate. We're talking like a bigger guy. Is he going to be able to make a pass, or is he going to be able to make his presence felt in pass rush as a bigger guy? I don't think he's Vita Vea. You know, I think he's quite, you know, a bit larger than Vita Vea, at least certainly right now. I'm not sure that I see the signs of the work ethic. I'm not sure that I see the signs of the pass rush. So there's a place for him in the NFL, and the NFL will take their chances on him. I just don't think they're going to pay a lot for it. And so you're looking at instead like a guy like Braden Fisk. It was actually interesting in the All-Star. The guy I consider probably to be the best guard in the draft, as in the guy who actually played guard and will be drafted as a guard, is Christian Haynes of UConn. Because Graham Barton, you know, he played tackle. Jackson Powers Johnson, he played center. You know, Zach Frazier, is he going to be a guard? I don't know, but he's a center. The best guard is Christian Haynes. And in the All-Star game, I watched those two go up against each other. That was just it felt like an epic battle of Christian Haynes versus Braden Fisk. And it felt like, okay, this is what it's like to see two really good NFL players go up against each other. And I think that Braden Fisk is absolutely activity level. I mean, he idolizes Zach Sealer. He would fit in the Dolphins very well. So I would put him into that day one sort of discussion, along with Byron Murphy, and Johnny Newton. So that's where it probably ends for day one. And, you know, Tavondre Sweat, quite honestly, I wouldn't touch until day three.
All right, Simon, who's the headliner for day two and why is it Chris Jenkins?
You always say this, and I always like it. It isn't Chris Jenkins, though. Like,
I'm almost offended for Chris Jenkins because I've been reading so much stuff about him. Everybody keeps dropping him for no apparent reason whatsoever.
I think
he hasn't played a game since January 12th.
Just a lack of interior pass rush. I mean, I think he's one of the best run defenders from the defensive tackle group. But I think his ceiling might just be capped by that. The fact that, you know, as a two gapper, you know, he showed versatility. He has a one gapper as well and lining up outside of end, but that production is low in terms of, you know, what he was able to do. Certainly as a pass rusher, obviously NFL background. His dad was Chris Jenkins Sr., who was the three-time All-Pro with the Panthers and stuff, but he wins against the run and they're not sexy anymore in terms of, you know, the people are looking for guys that can get after the quarterback. To me, one of the interesting guys is Tyler Davis, the kid at Clemson. Clemson have got two defensive tackles. Ruke him and Davis, who's 6'1", 299 pounds, but he's got a lot of talent. He's had a couple of sort of years stymied with injury, but he is a borderline dominant force when he is healthy, and he can get to the quarterback. He's had two seasons of 5.5+ sacks. He's a very strong run defender, and if he's healthy, he is he's got big upside, and he could be anything that he wants to be. And you know, he's got shorter arms. You're never going to fix that, but his speed and explosion and violent hands remind me a little bit of Grady Jarrett coming out. And we know what sort of player Jarrett was. And I think he, like I said, if he stays healthy, he will be an extremely good player. He'll probably be a better pro than he was a collegian. And then there's the kid at LSU, Mason Smith. You know, he's just 21, but just a massive ceiling. Was extremely highly regarded coming out. You know, chose LSU over pretty much everybody in the nation. Got his first offer in the ninth grade. I mean, that tells you how good he was. He was a day one starter as a true freshman. Tore his ACL against Florida State after only 8 snaps. Came back last year. Wasn't great. Just looked a bit tentative on the knee. But, you know, he has got so much talent in terms of, you know, just scratching the surface. But, you know, he's 6'5". He's 306 pounds. He's extremely explosive. He's extremely athletic. But, you know, he's just coming back from the injury. And I suspect, again, this is going to be another guy who just develops into a really good pro. He is so committed. He is smart and responsible. And he understands what needs to be done to become a high-level player. And, yeah, I like him a lot. He's a good kid and a good player.
Last thing on Chris Jenkins, he's a falling stock since he stepped off the field January 12th. Started at 29 on Kuiper's board, 28 on Daniel Jeremiah's board. Now they're both on both boards. He's hugging the 50s, inside of the 50s. Is that right? He goes second. Third Maybe. Round, second round?
Yeah, I think he's probably a sort of late. I think he's a sort of round three guy. I think he's got a lot going on away from the game. Like, nothing bad. He's just, he's a great student. He's extremely bright. He sings in the choir. You know, a guy I spoke to at Michigan says, you know, he does his own thing, but really gets on with his teammates. He's beloved, you know. You never see him down, very lovable, hangs out with the kids in the choir, he's not a big jock at all, doesn't really hang out with the football guys as much. You know, lots of interest, lots of big hinterland kind of thing. And maybe what scouts and football people are like. If anybody's like not conforming to the absolute norm, and you know, these classes are weirdo. So he's a good kid.
Yeah, most scouts are looking for meatheads, not intellectuals.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
You know, Chris, your day two headliner, and give us a few guys.
Well, I'll pipe up for you on Chris Jenkins. I think that after a certain point with the defensive tackles, you know, you're always looking for you know, for lack of a better term, sort of those unicorns that you think will make plays in both phases of the game, be strong run presences, but also have that ability to pass rush. And that's why, you know, you like the first step quickness of Byron Murphy. You look at Johnny Newton's history, what he was able to do at Illinois, moving all around the line and rushing the passer, Braden Fisk's activity level, things like that. If you're reaching for the stars a little bit when it comes to a defensive tackle, trying to, you know, get a guy that can be a factor in the passing game. But once you get beyond a certain point, once you're no longer in that first round, probably not even in the very top of the second round, then I would be looking at the guys that I can trust to do a thing. And that thing that I want them to do is to stop the run. And that's because schematically you can find ways to get pass rush out there, either via blitzing or with sub packaging. And so I need guys that can do a thing, and Chris Jenkins is a guy that can do a thing. And so I would pipe up for him. He reminds me a little bit maybe of Daron Payne. Everybody's mileage will vary. But I think that he can be a good player in the NFL and one worthy of that day two. Now, who else would I go for? Obviously, Michael Hall, junior of Ohio State,
is
a very, very good player. Speaking of athleticism, twitch, activity level, versatility, you know, all of those things. I think that I would probably pipe up for him in the room, and I think many people in the NFL probably agree. So he's probably ending up in that second round area. So that's another guy for sure that I would look at. I don't know if he's going to go on actually in day two, but I would look at the whole of his career at Duke and Dwayne Carter. And his being a three-time captain, and you know the ability that he showed to be consistent at Duke, and that's the sort of guy that you know kind of intrigues me sometimes, because before you know it, you're like, wow, you know he's actually really a starter in this league, and just consistently doing well, just as he did at Duke. But I think, you know, those guys.
All right, Simon, we're getting to day three. Give us a day three guy and a priority UDFA. I will give you a UDFA or seventh round pick. Justin Rogers, nose tackle, Auburn. He makes it through the draft without getting drafted. He is the perfect zero candidate to bring into camp as a UDFA and compete with Benito Jones. I like him, heavy-handed, strong, heavily recruited, went to Kentucky, transferred to Auburn, good player. What say you, Simon? Do you have a day three guy and a priority UDFA?
Yeah, I think Rogers will get drafted, by the way, mate. He's a rock-solid day three guy for me. I like Jaden Cremady of Mississippi State. He's 47 starts. He's a stout run defender. He's very athletic, ran a 4.97. He lines up mainly actually as a defensive end in an odd front, but he has great size to play inside, power, heavy hands, pop at the point of attack, good pad level. You know, there's some issues. He's played 6 years of college football. There's still things to unlock. He needs to improve consistency and play identification. He plays a little bit out of control, but I like him. He's an interesting player. And then in terms of an undrafted free agent, I don't know really. Jordan Jefferson of LSU, solid run defender, 327 pounds. He's the sort of guy that you come in and put in the mix with the guys that you've talked about. You know, keeps his feet moving, IDs the ball well. He's got some run defending chops to him. So he'd probably get drafted, but in that sort of back end of day three, falls into free agency kind of thing.
Chris, day three guy, priority UDFA.
Day three guy, I think I would say Bama, Justin Aboigbe. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his name, but he is a guy that played defensive end at Alabama, and you know, consistently that's where he lined up. He's over 6'4". He's about 300 pounds. With, you know, I think, something like a 6'8", 6'9" wingspan, along those lines. He is attractively built, and he played end, and he was able to play end effectively at Alabama. He won't do that in the NFL. So automatically, you know, you're talking about a guy that's going to be playing a little bit different in the NFL, and with that comes some question marks, of course, but I don't think they're bad question marks. I think that there's a set, there's upside as well as downside there. I think that if you play him at defensive tackle in the NFL, you might just be pleasantly surprised. The way that he is able to move for that size, the way he's able to get his first step, second step, you know, his acceleration, things like that. I saw a service which does a lot of work digesting film through their, you know, through AI and deep learning machines in order to try and come up with accelerations and speeds based on how these guys are moving. You know, they had Justin Aboigbe as one of the more athletic defensive end edge players in the draft, just based on how he moves as an end. And I think that you could be pleasantly surprised you move him into defensive tackle at the next level. I would roll the dice there. PFA type. Simon, I'm actually interested in hearing what you would think about Fabian Lovett of Florida State. Because honestly, when I have looked at Florida State, when I have looked at him, you know, he is a big body. And he is a strong, large human, and he plays like that, but he also has like some surprising ability and overall athleticism. I know he ran a 5.01 at 6'4", 316. He has like 35.5-inch arms, and he's huge. He's got 10.5-inch hands. He's, you know, I think his cone drill was a 7.5 or something like that. He can move in addition to being just a big, strong human. And I was a little bit surprised. I kind of expected him to be one thing, and he was a little bit more of another. And that attracts me in a sort of a seventh round PFA type of area.
Yeah, high motor kind of tone setter guy, solid run defender, made every single snap count. I think the issue with him was just the, you know, he hasn't really played much during the last two seasons because of injuries, and you know, only 556 snaps in total in his career. So not many, you know, not been on the field a lot. But you're right.
Well, you mean the last 2 years? No, he's had like a he's old. He's like 24.
Oh no, he is old. He is absolutely old. But he's just been so shoulder issue in 2021. Missed five games in 2022. Had surgery on his ankle. Has missed games again this year. I need to check that number. I'm pretty sure it's 556 snaps in total.
I have that in those last 2 years. Okay. But he had like, you know, almost 500 snaps the year before in 21. He had almost 320. Almost 500 from, he was a Mississippi State guy, I remember. And so he transferred. So he's actually like a sixth year guy.
Yeah,
and
he'll be 25 in December.
Yeah, for some people that will never fly, right? You know, yeah, because absolutely. That's just, you know, but I also the flip side of that is a guy who might be ready to walk into the NFL. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
he is strong and he can choke the inside run game. You know, he's an interesting kid and well liked to Florida State as well.
All right, moving on. And we're going to make quick work of the linebackers. There are no day one guys.
That's true.
Edgerrin Cooper is who you have, maybe?
Well, Peyton Wilson and Edgerrin Cooper, I think, are worth conversations about. I mean, Wilson's medicals obviously are, you know, a massive thing, but he's a day one player in terms of his talent.
Yeah, I always thought that Peyton Wilson would be a first round pick if he didn't have how many surgeries?
10 surgeries he's had since let me just check, since the senior year of high school.
So he's lived in the hospital for the past 3 years.
Yeah, and I can't remember.
That's an average of 3 1/3 surgeries a year.
Yeah, apparently his Tony Pauline reported that his medicals were, and I don't know what the word was. I think the word was, he said it was ugly. at the combine. So,
tragic is the word.
Edrian Cooper's the other guy. You know, this is probably the best off ball linebacker in the class. He just moves differently to everybody else. He is a surface to air missile on the field who comes downhill. He is rangy. He is great in coverage. He can get after the quarterback. And in terms of 1 to 30 best players in the draft, you'd be hard pushed not to put him as one of the best in terms of what he does. He is a modern day off ball linebacker. So, you know, he probably is a second round pick, but it wouldn't surprise me if he went in the first round.
All right. Chris, do you have a first round pick, or you want to talk about these two guys?
Not really. Not really. And quite frankly, I just haven't really spent a lot of time on those guys anyway.
All right, moving on to day two. Simon, who's the day two headliner? Obviously, it's going to be Edrian Cooper, and Peyton Wilson should be in that mix somewhere. But past those guys, do you have a few to watch?
Yes, some guys. I mean, I think Junior Colson is a really good player and an amazing story. He was born in Haiti, came over to America when he was 9, didn't speak a word of English. Now he's probably a second round draft pick. He is good as a pass defender. He's great against the run, high football IQ, great frame. He is just good at football. He's the best tackling linebacker, I think, in the draft. Then Jeremiah Trotter, again, good player, excellent instincts, great movement skills, production, and obviously serious NFL bloodlines. His dad was Jeremiah Trotter Sr., who was with the Eagles in Washington and All-Pro at those, and Tampa Bay as well. A guy I really like who reminds me of Dre Greenlaw coming out of Arkansas is Edifuan Ulifosio of Washington. He was the 2,629th best college football prospect or prep prospect in the country. But he is a good player. He's an excellent cover linebacker. He's had some injuries, but he is loose-hipped and he's twitchy in coverage and he has the speed to run down the field. He's a good player. And then Trevon Wallace, I like at Kentucky as well. He's kind of a true junior. Looked really good last year. He's raw, but he is very fast. He is very physical. He is very versatile. He's very athletic. He was highly recruited. He's a track standout. He's a state champion weightlifter. He ran 10.8 flat in the 100 meters. He was a team captain. He's been clocked at 23 miles an hour on GPS. Yeah, this kid has got upside to absolutely die for. So. He's an interesting. He was 11th on Bruce Feldman's freaks list, so he's a he's an interesting player.
What do you do with James Williams? He played monster back at UM, which is hybrid strong safety box safety position that they essentially created for him.
Yeah, he's a safety to me. I think he's a safety, but he's just a bigger safety. He did all the safety drills.
He gained 10 pounds.
Yeah, he did no linebacker drills at the combine, which I thought was instructive in terms of his future. He is big. He's 6'4", 230. I mean, he's 10 pounds heavier than Kyle. I can't remember his name now. Christ. The kid at
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bit like Isaiah Simmons in a way, almost like a player without portfolio. You know, is he a pure safety or is he an alley runner or is he a box linebacker or is he an off-ball linebacker or is he a tight end eliminator who can run down the field? You know,
yeah, they even created a position for him in college.
Yeah, exactly. But he's not.
Well, they often do though. I mean, that's not new. They did that for. I think Cam Chancellor played, I actually compare him to Cam Chancellor a lot. I think that they're probably very similar if you stack up their height, weight, speed kind of metrics and put them next to each other. Those two compare very similarly. But I think that often there's a guy, Brian Urlacher, they created a position for, you know. if you go way back and go way back far enough.
Yeah.
All right. Just touch on one guy. I don't know if, Chris, you want to touch on day two guys, linebacking group?
Yeah, nobody really at day two. I think that there are guys in day three PFA to look at. I am actually a big fan of James Williams. But I think that he
so
is.
Am I. I just don't know what he is in the NFL.
I think he's a straight up safety. I think that he's got the versatility and movement skills and everything to be a safety. So that's another podcast.
All right, you gotta touch on this guy, Simon, because our listeners are going to be interested in very familiar name, Tommy Eichenberg.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, brother of Liam. To me, he's a two down player. He's heady. He's smart. He's, you know, he reads his keys. He flows the ball downhill and makes tackles against the run. He just understands how to play the run. He's instinctive and physical, 3-year star. But to me, he's just, you know, a two down lunch pail guy. And that's pretty much all he is. And look, every team needs component parts, you know, and he's a small part who could be a rotational early down piece and a special teams player, but you're never going to mistake him for anything other than the guy that does exactly what it says on the tin, and that's what he is. He's a kind of an Alex Singleton, sort of Malcolm Rodriguez-y kind of type, a sound run defender.
All right, and moving on, day three, UDFAs. You got one, two, or three?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of guys I like. Tyrese Knight of UTEP, I think he's a really good player. He's got really good instinct. He processes really well. There's kind of a lot to work with there. And I thought he put together 2 years of really good tape. There's a kid at Missouri called Tyron Hopper who transferred from Florida. He was a finalist for the Butkus Award actually this year as a weak side linebacker. I think he's just really good in coverage. And when he was at Florida, they literally spent 2 years putting him on Kyle Pitts every day just to sharpen his skills. And we're just like, dude, you just go 1v1 against this alien and see how you get on. And he is very good in as a pass defender. And then there's a kid at UCLA that I think the Dolphins have shown a little bit of interest in, Darius Muasau. I can't even put it, like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Muasau, 51 game starter anyway across two schools, Hawaii and UCLA, mid to late three, late day three guy who could go a bit higher actually because he's traitsy and he's smart and he's got a good brain, directs traffic at the second level. He's always talking and resetting teammates, getting everybody lined up. He was a bit slow, ran a 4.7, but he breaks down well in space. He's a blitzer. He had 11 and a half sacks in his last 2 years at Hawaii, comes downhill. You know, he's a, you know, you're only going to want him playing short zone coverage against the pass, but you know, you're going to have linebacker coaches banging the table for him on Saturday afternoon because, you know, he's had 568 snaps on kick coverage units, you know, and he'll play straight away on, you know, on special teams. He was excellent at the Shrine Bowl. Yeah, I mean, that's a guy I like.
Chris, day three UDFAs, and I think we could finish up right here.
Well, I think day three, I would take a look at Jalen Ford of Texas. I think that he's attractive in the depth that he can get in coverage. I think that he's just a good all around guy. I think Notre Dame has two guys that I like. Marist Lefau is more of a run and hit, more athletic. If I'm not mistaken, you know, I think he ran like a 4.6, something somewhere around there at 6'2", 234. But he's got really long arms and he's very attractive, agility wise. But his teammate JD Bertrand is also very attractive to me because I think that he's, the more heady, you know, sort of, polished linebacker who can direct the unit and, you know, and function that way. He's no slouch athletically either. I thought those two played really well together. So I think that they are guys that I am interested in. Both Jordan McGee of Temple. This is a guy, I think he ran like a 4.53 or something like that. You know, he's good at running and getting depth. And I think that can be really attractive in the linebacker. He's also good in both phases of the pass game, really. He's good in coverage. And I think he's also good as a blitzer pass rusher. You know, is he going to be at 6 foot, you know, whatever, 2-3 and 225 pounds? Is he going to be the guy that's, you know, a wrecking ball in the running game? I'm not sure about that, But at the same time, you know, this is where the NFL is heading, is toward guys that are that can run and be trusted in coverage and be potentially all three downs. And that's kind of the mold that I see him in. So those are really the four. Simon, you didn't mention him, but Michael Barrett, I'm curious what you think of him at Michigan, because I think the Dolphins have paid a little bit of attention to him. So I'd be curious what you think of him.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy, essentially, his mum said that he was born with a football in his hand, an absolute footballer. So he's going to be 25 in December, but a football obsessive. He is known as a bit of a culture builder at Michigan, along with Mikey Sanders, still in terms of just the mentality and the leadership. He was a high school quarterback. He was recruited to play essentially that sort of Viper position that Jabril Peppers made famous at Michigan, and he kicked about. He was a running back then, special teams ace. He had 500 plus snaps on coverage units. Then he went back to linebacker, starter, team captain, and left as the winningest player in Michigan history. He's very physical, but he's a bit small. He's 5'11", 233 for an off-ball linebacker. He's a little bit small, but he's rangy. And when he's protected and, you know, uncovered, he can flash a little bit. He can knife into the backfield. He can pressure the pocket as a late blitzer. And he's physical. I mean, he's not instinctive necessarily, and he's not particularly anticipatory on a down by down basis, but you know, he's not a bad player. He's solid in coverage as a zone defender. He processes well. He's got good eye discipline in zone. And I saw him matched up in man, and he didn't embarrass himself in short areas. So, you know, the age will play against him, but I suspect sort of late day three or UDFA guy, you know, a team might take a look at him as a bottom of the roster guy and somebody that can star on special teams and bring a bit of culture in terms of, you know, responsibility and leadership. And Michael Barrett could be the guy.
All right. We are going to end it right here, but I want Simon, give me 30 seconds. Kellen Deloach, my favorite UDFA of the entire class, the entire draft class. What do you think?
I mean, he's 5'11", 210 now. So, you know.
4'4", 840. Team captain at FSU.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can keep saying things, but he's 210 pounds, mate. So, his brother played basketball at Loyola, and his sister was a track standout at Ohio State, and his dad was in the Air Force. But he's still 210 pounds, you know. Yeah, I mean, he eats 3,500 calories a day just to maintain that weight. So that tells you all you need to know. Look, last season he had 7 sacks, 10.5 tackles for a loss. He's athletic in coverage. He can match up with backs and tight ends, but I just don't know what he is. He's 210 pounds. He's going to be a sub-package blitzer or a big nickel with some special teams value who maybe you can throw on the field on, you know, on obvious passing downs. Whether that happens on draft night, day three, or whether that happens after the draft remains to be seen.
All right, we'll end it right there. We are done here. All that is left are defensive backs, cornerbacks, and safeties, and we will do that the next time we talk to you. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.